Ken Loudon, portfolio manager for the Buffalo Large Cap Growth Fund, is here. We're talking stocks, and this is the Money Life Market Call. Welcome to the Market Call, the part of the show where we talk with experienced money managers about how they do their job, what they look for that determines their buys and sells, what they see happening broadly in the market, and how they put it all together. And my guest today is Ken Loudon. He is portfolio manager for the Buffalo Large Cap Growth Fund. It's BUFEX if you are following along at home. And if you want to follow along and get more details, then it's buffalofunds.com. Ken Loudon, thanks for coming back to Money Life.
Glad to be back. Good to talk to you, Chuck.
Money Life guests appear on the Gainbridge Hotline. Gainbridge helps you take control of your financial future. Self-manage your annuity investments from purchase to payout via Gainbridge's easy-to-use online portal at gainbridge.life. Gain access, gain control, Gainbridge. Ken, we always start with methodology. And so large cap growth, well, it tells us where you invest, but it doesn't even tell us what you consider growthy, let alone what you're looking for. So explain how it works, and then we'll dive into your big picture and more.
Well, I guess I just start off by saying that we continue to follow a very well-defined investment template for investing in what we call innovative, high-quality, durable, large-cap growth companies. We sort of, in this business, we worship at the altar of innovation and transformative change, and those are the types of companies we look for. We've really narrowed down our strategy into four key investment tenets. I mentioned the focus on high-quality, durable growth companies who are transforming a large and growing addressable market, but who also are able to, or likely, to double EPS over the next 5 years. I think number two is we want to invest in companies that generate high cash flow returns on invested capital. We like at least 15%, higher is better, while ensuring they are growing revenues fast enough so they can reinvest these excess cash flows at high rates of return. Two other points, Chuck. We believe the biggest risk to permanent loss of capital is excessive debt. Accordingly, we are assiduously focusing our investments on companies who possess pristine balance sheets that will materially mitigate any risk of our portfolio being negatively impacted by a company with too much debt. And then lastly, and not insignificantly, is our management teams must have a proven track record of operating excellence, having demonstrated in the past they can successfully scale a business into both a successful and impactful company.
So you're looking for what some people would call battleship balance sheets. At the same time, if you're looking to avoid loss as assiduously as you talked about, well, we've got a frothy market right now. How do you mix that I want loss aversion with your macro outlook and say, okay, this is what I want to ride with, and this is maybe what I want to change in these markets?
Good question. First of all, we do have a long 3 to 5 year investment time horizon. So we are not trying to get too caught up in the nuances of the macro, although we do pay attention to the macro. As an example, the large cap growth fund, we're about 350 basis points underweight tech relative to our benchmark, and we're several hundred basis points overweight healthcare. And those overweights, underweights are somewhat dictated by the current market environment we've been coming into, and that it's hot from a hawkish inflation standpoint for sure. But it's also, if you look at rate of change, which drives a lot of decisions that we make from investment standpoints, the rate of change in GDP and the rate of change in inflation, while still above trend, are going to be declining in 2022. And those are sort of what we would call a deflationary environment in that terms of rate of change, not in absolute numbers. And that's never really good for high growth technology stocks or long duration assets, as they may say. So we tweaked the portfolio to reflect sort of a de-risked environment, but while continuing to own some of these high quality, durable growth names that we think will certainly beneficiaries of these major super cycles over the next 5 to 10 years.
If we're finding those pristine balance sheets, is the sell discipline mostly that there's something that hits home on the balance sheet? Because it sounds like, again, you're paying attention to the macro, but you're not letting the macro drive it.
We tweak based on the macro. We don't dramatically change based on the macro. If we do our job right up front, we're making sure stocks don't get, or companies don't get in the portfolio that have any chance of a balance sheet issue. I'll give you a quick example. If you look at our portfolio, which is made up of basically 65 different names, the overall portfolio's debt ratio, which is what we call debt to EBITDA, right? We have net cash position for our companies, and it's a 0.06 positive net cash position. If you look at the S&P 500 even, right? The S&P 500's debt ratio was somewhere around 0.7 or 0.8, and the Russell 1000 growth is even a little bit higher than that. So they have net debt positions in the S&P 500 and the Russell 1000 growth. We actually have net cash positions in these 65 companies on an aggregate basis.
Interesting. So now let's bring it down to brass tacks. What's the poster child for the methodology? What's a stock or two that really stand out to you as the kind of thing that is personifying what you want to do, what you most want to have in the portfolio?
I have three, I guess, favorite ideas I'd like to highlight. But I probably should preface for your investors that as we get into this more volatile environment in 2022, we'll see some normalizing of inflation and growth as we move throughout the year, but it still won't be normal. So if we are seeing this persistent inflationary environment, just be sure to own companies with good pricing power who possess secular, importantly, not cyclical growth trends. And to answer your question, for us, I guess this means overweighting certain software and semi-cap equipment companies who are right in the epicenter of sort of this digital everywhere sort of environment that we're in. My first company I would briefly talk about is Palo Alto Networks, symbol PANW, the roughly $50 billion cybersecurity firm capitalizing on this digital transformation super cycle and the heightened need for broader security spending by both governments and enterprises. It's one of the largest cybersecurity firms in the world. Why we like it is it's just completed a three-year plus product transformation from essentially offering a single product for enterprise cybersecurity, and that being basically an on-premise network firewall, to offering a broader hybrid cloud on-premise cybersecurity software platform. The operative word on platform, not a single product. This gives the company's large customer base who are transitioning to the cloud a cybersecurity option that they're more familiar with as opposed to having to rely on Microsoft or Amazon Web Services cybersecurity tools. So we're seeing really good growth, I think, from Palo Alto over the next 5 years. We see the shares compounding within sort of the maybe mid-teens on a year-over-year basis for the next 3 years. I think the stock's roughly at, what, 520? Today on Friday, and I think the stock can get into the 760 range given this 20% plus growth profile and maybe get up to trading back up to 10 times revenue.
Okay. So that's Palo Alto Networks. You talked about three, so let's move on.
Second one, and arguably maybe my favorite child, is a company called ASML based in the Netherlands. ASML, and it sounds maybe a bit provocative, but this is perhaps one of the five most important companies in the world. It has a market cap about $300 billion. They make the machines that make semiconductors. And each of these machines are high-tech, what they call, and I don't want to be overly complex, ultraviolet lithography, which is advanced light technology, essentially. And those machines cost their customers about $150 to $200 million each. And they need to be shipped in 3747s to those clients. And these are clients like Intel, Taiwan Semiconductor, and Samsung. Company's key growth driver is an extreme ultraviolet, or what they call an EVU version of its base technology, that uses this very unique shorter wavelength to print a miniaturized version of an already nano-sized electrical circuit onto a wafer. And these smaller high-density chips facilitate things like AI, machine learning, the Internet of Things, graphics displays so online gaming can occur. It really is an enabler of technology, the next gen technology that without those ASML machines, we would not be able to achieve. So ASML is right in the sweet spot. I think this stock doubles over the next 5 years, Chuck.
And the third one?
Third one is $26 billion market cap company called MongoDB. It's a rapidly growing leader in the next generation database category. It's already established itself, in our view, as one of the most popular modern databases. particularly within the developer IT community, who needs this sort of database to develop big data and real-time cloud-based applications. It's a non-SQL-based database, and I probably get a little too technical, but again, it's a high-growth, long-duration asset. It has an enterprise value to revenue multiple of 22 times, so it's not for the faint of heart. But when you're growing revenue probably 35 to 40% over the next 5 years, focused on the large database market, which has been dominated by Oracle for the last 30 years, right? Now we maybe have a baby Oracle in the making here with MongoDB. The only thing I would stress you, my last comment on this one, is that this is a long duration asset, right? And so they won't be free cash flow positive for another year. And that's not a stock that would typically do well in an environment of accelerating higher interest rates. So if you're a short-term trader and decide to take a deeper look, just keep in mind that we're not calling the bottom here on that stock, but we do think from a secular position, secular growth story, it's great, great company.
And quickly, let's talk about one thing you've had to move away from. We talked a little bit about the sell discipline. What's one stock you had to give up on?
I would say DocuSign is probably one of those names. It's a single product company. You're probably familiar with their e-signature, digital e-signature software you use to sign mortgage papers or real estate transactions. Very cool. But the problem is they're a single product company, Chuck, and they somehow need to transition from a single product document company to a digital document management platform. And I'm not sure how they do that, with the transitioning not taking a lot of time and a lot of money. Plus, you've got Adobe nibbling at their heels on the document platform side with their own version of an e-signature. So I think it's just facing some headwinds that I'd probably rather watch from the sidelines on.
And that's DocuSign, D-O-C-U. Now we're going to get your quick and dirty take on some stocks my audience is particularly interested in.
Quick and dirty.
Go get all your money.
Well, we don't know that you want to get all your money, but you want to be making sure your money's going into interesting places. And we're going to find out if Ken Loudon thinks that some of your picks are interesting. Ken is portfolio manager for Buffalo Large Cap Growth, B-U-F-E-X. Learn more at buffalofunds.com. Of course, quick and dirty, you know how it works. Get your ticker symbols in. Chuck at moneylifeshow.com is how you do it. We said we redid the entire list, but even as we redo it, it's always changing. When Sean in Grinnell, Iowa sent us the first request, well, it was Square, SQ, but today it's not even called Square anymore. Now it's Block. So how do you feel about ticker symbol SQ?
Yeah, well, I would point out a lot of these names, the risk-reward is a lot more favorable after this sell-off. But we moved away from Block last August when they decided to spend $30 billion of shareholder capital to acquire a large buy now, pay later company based in Australia called Afterpay. We're very confused and quite frankly negative on the buy now, pay later business model, as it's really akin, dare I say, a retail version of subprime loans. Although at least with subprime loans, you've got collateral in a potentially appreciating asset. Buy now, pay later, you're assuming all the credit risk, Chuck, from retailers at a zero interest rate, by the way, where the underlying collaterals are depreciating goods like clothes, shoes, or furniture, unlike a house. We're still staying away from it.
What is your major malfunction, numbnuts?
Well, you just heard the major malfunction that made Ken Loudon and the team at the Buffalo Funds move away from Block, ticker SQ. Next, for Tom in Smithfield, Kentucky, it's PayPal, P-Y-P-L.
Wow, what a similar story to Block in some respects, both in fintech. PayPal shares have, I think, declined something like 27% in the fourth quarter owing to concerns also related to an acquisition. There was rumors that they were going to spend $50 billion to acquire social networking site Pinterest. And Pinterest, as you may know, has very little to do with the digital payments or fintech industry. When this was first reported in, I think, the Wall Street Journal, we took our position in PayPal down by two-thirds as acquiring Pinterest would be akin to competing with your social website customers like Instagram as a payment tool, which is never a good idea to compete with your customers. The company eventually decided to not pursue Pinterest, given the stock reaction, but the fact that there was a tacit acknowledgement at all that they were interested in Pinterest has created a durable pall over the shares. I think the bottom line here is we think PayPal should stick to disrupting the digital payment space and stay away from owning social media sites. So we're still watching from the sidelines on this one as well.
PayPal, PYPL.
Put that one on the psycho list.
Not necessarily entirely on the psycho list, but they're watching from the sidelines for the reasons you just heard. That's a sell, or a wait and see, at least, on PYPL. Richard in Chula Vista, California, wants to know about what was Restoration Hardware. It now goes by its ticker symbol, RH.
RH is, by the way, just a great company with great products and is trying to get into the luxury brand marketplace, which in this with rich consumer balance sheets has been the right place to be. RH is highly correlated to the stock market, as you may know, with its high-end customer base. And the stock market is I think it's going to be a rough 2022. Like RH and their move into Western Europe, that's a big new growth driver. But I think the fact that the market is likely going to be rough this year, I would probably stay away short term and come back and maybe visit this sometime going into the fall.
It's maybe hold it if you've got it and you want to ride through it, but mostly it's...
I'm just taking my time before making the move.
Yeah, no better than a hold on RH, the former Restoration Hardware, now it's just RH. Jake in Chicago wants to know about Medtronic PLC. That's MDT.
A great leader in the medical device industry, and the stock's been hit pretty dramatically over the course of the last 4 or 5 months as it relates to some setbacks in its new product pipeline. And the setbacks, we just don't have enough information to know if this is a temporal or a longer-term issue. Take away the products in the pipeline, you still have basically a 5% organic revenue grower with some margin expansion. Really like what the new CEO has done, Jeff Martha, over the course of the last 18 months in his reign. Stock probably trades sideways, particularly with Omicron impacting sort of medical procedure volume. But if you, again, have a time frame longer than 6 to 12 months, I think Medtronic is a great name to own.
It's hit rock bottom. Come on, let's buy.
Well, maybe not rock bottom, but again, it's been hit, but a good long-term buy on MDT, Medtronic. And last, for Paul in Green Bay, Wisconsin, but also for me because it's in my portfolio, Honeywell International, ticker HON.
So just the short version here is, you know, an excellent managed company, a terrific senior management team. Company has some supply constraints they're dealing with. Aerospace business is still behind the eight ball and that it hasn't fully recovered as a result of COVID. And labor issues are now starting to perk up and become a problem. I think earnings outlook for the next couple of quarters is probably somewhat muted. Again, I think they're sort of well-positioned in the digital industrialization market, but this is sort of more of a 12 to 18 month sort of opportunity. I think near term, there's probably some better opportunities.
So again, if you're going to wind up riding out things, well, that's one choice that you can make. But otherwise, you are moving away from Honeywell, ticker symbol H-O-N. And oh, by the way, we will have to move away from Ken Loudon because we've come to the end of our time. But Ken, this was great. Thanks so much for taking the time to join me. I look forward to our next conversation down the line.
Cheers. Have a great weekend.
That is Ken Loudon, portfolio manager for the Buffalo Large Cap Growth Fund. It's B-U-F-E-X, online at buffalofunds.com, on Twitter at Buffalo Funds. We'll be back to tell you where Ken agreed or disagreed with some other guests, and we'll set you up for the rest of the week before we cross the finish line together right after this message.